investigative journalist with the Sacramento Bee. He published a series of articles about the agency using agency insiders, former employees, and documents. He won a Pulitzer Prize for the coverage. And that work has really led to another cycle of, you know, more information out there about what they're doing, whereas typically they hide what they do, and calls for reform. And so what we think needs to happen here this time is reform from within the executive branch, and in particular through promulgation of a regulatory framework. We think that's probably one of the very few ways that can get us to the place that we need to be, which is a modern program that addresses issues of concern to the public at large and not just to private agribusiness interests. And so we hope that our petition for rulemaking, which we filed in December, will be granted, and that there will be an opportunity for the public to weigh in through comment and guide the agency's development of a binding regulatory framework, which will require transparency, consistency with environmental laws, policies, and the values of the modern American society.
And currently, the Secretary of Agriculture is Tom Vilsack, is that correct?
That's right.
And would he be a person to contact?
Yes, he would. In fact, we encourage anyone who's concerned about this issue to go to our website, biologicaldiversity.org, and under our current action alerts, you will find a way to tell Tom Vilsack, the Secretary of the Agriculture Department, to grant our petition for rulemaking and do what we've been asking them to do, and develop a regulatory framework to bind the agency moving forward.
And again, that was stopwildlifekilling, all one word, .org.
Well, yes, it's stopwildlifekilling.org.
Okay. Very good. Our listeners might be interested in that.
Well, I hope that, with the new information being out there, that we'll have more interest from the public and more pressure put on the Agriculture Department to do something to bring this agency under control.
Okay. Amy, thank you very much. For KBU News, I'm Jim Thompson.
KBU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 13th annual Explorando on Saturday, June 14th at Whitaker Ponds Nature Park from 1 to 5 p.m. Explorando will feature live music, folkloric dances, guided canoe trips, hands-on environmental activities by rock climbing wall, and more! Explorando gives people the opportunity to learn about the importance of preserving the nature of the Columbia Slough. Again, that's Explorando, June 14th at Whitaker Ponds Nature Park from 1 to 5 p.m. More information can be found on kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:03, and you're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio 90.7 FM. Upcoming next is Labor Radio at 6, and at 6:30 it is Prison Pipeline, followed by Hard Knock Radio at 7, so please do stay tuned. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the 27th Safeway Waterfront Blues Festival, July 3rd through July 6th at Waterfront Park, which benefits Oregon Food Bank and features Greg Allman, Boz Skaggs, Los Lobos, Maceo Parker, Bombino, Charlie Musselwhite, Ivan Nevels, Dumpstafunk, and many more. Information, complete schedule, and pass information can be found online at waterfrontbluesfest.com.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
What I'd like this show to be is about the struggle itself. And, like, the newsworthy item is what's going on right now.
In Bogota, Colombia, workers from a General Motors plant continue their protest outside the U.S. Embassy. 13 current and former workers from GM's Colmotores plant launched a hunger strike earlier this month after camping out outside the embassy for a year.
But I'd like to be able to give people some of the background and stuff, and what I was going to do for that is hopefully talk to Frank.
Yeah, I'm Frank Hammer. I'm a retired UAW member, former GM worker retiree, and I'm working with the Asociación Solidarity Network.
Piece together some of the stuff we've done in Labor Radio in the past, maybe get some stuff from the documentary.
Colombia es, al día de hoy, Colombia es, al día de hoy, la cuarta economía más grande de América Latina.
Just to give people a sense of, you know, that this has been going on a long time, and there's a lot of dedication around it, and there's a, you know, that there's a real a history and a movement, and this is a moment, this is a particular moment.
As Labor Radio airs, actually, it's at the same time as big actions in Detroit. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're planning and where we go from there?
Yes, Tuesday will be the date for the annual GM shareholders meeting. It's taking place in downtown Detroit, and we, the Sotico Solidarity Network and others, have planned two rallies. It will be a joint coming together of not only the supporters of the Colombian workers who've been subject to abuse by General Motors, but we will combine with some of the family members of folks who died in car crashes due to the faulty ignition switches that GM installed in a variety of cars. I think it's 2.6 million cars. Chevy, Cobalt, Saturn Ions, and others. And we're calling on the shareholders to hold the GM executives accountable for the treatment of the Colombian workers and for the deaths and injuries experienced by people who have been had the unfortunate situation of being in these cars when the ignition switch failed, airbags failed to function, and cars lost all their power. So we're hoping that the GM shareholders will consider holding the GM executives accountable.
My name is Paige Shell-Sperling, and I'm a volunteer with the Portland Central America Solidarity Committee. I got involved in the struggle after visiting Colombia with Witness for Peace on a labor delegation, and I've been involved for about 2 years. We've been lucky to see a lot of people in Portland, including Jobs with Justice, PCAS, and a number of other organizations involved for the last 2 years. And we are organizing actions across the country in Detroit. We have actions that are happening all across the country in different cities, visiting dealerships, and we're doing that right here in Portland, Oregon. When I first met these guys in the tents, I was surprised because I was 32 years old, and I realized that these guys were my age. And I just couldn't believe somebody my age could be taking on a big multinational corporation like General Motors in a country like Colombia where so many people are killed for standing up for their labor rights. So just the fact that they were intense in front of the U.S. Embassy kind of, I don't know, I guess it just captured my imagination a bit. And to meet their families and to get to know them, I mean, it was just like really, really touching. But I don't think that my support really became very strong until I started to translate their documents. So I was looking at their medical records, and I was looking at, you know, the injuries that they had developed on the job. And, like, in case after case, I was reading the description when I was figuring out the medical translation, and it was saying, you know, caused by repetitive stress, repetitive movements, or lifting things that are too heavy. And I was just like, wow, this is incredible. It's so obvious that these guys were injured doing their jobs. They were stressed on the street without anything, and they've just been, you know, left.
Do you know much about where public opinion is at regarding these workers in their own country?
This struggle is pretty unprecedented, both for the international solidarity that they've gotten from us and also just from the tactics that they've used, that they've been in front of the U.S. Embassy for so long. They've made some really big gains. They've gotten $6 million worth of improvements, ergonomic improvements within the plant, which is pretty incredible. I mean, it's something that the union inside of the plant has been asking for decades, but it wasn't until the struggle came along that they were able to achieve that. So within unions in Colombia, you know, it's like the heads of the biggest unions are coming by and just congratulating them for the struggle that they've been able to carry there in Colombia. And then as far as like the news in Colombia, it came out at first when they first camped out, and then it kind of disappeared from the news and they were just kind of forgotten. And it's really, I mean, it's incredible their determination that they're able to be there almost 3 years now and not be receiving a lot of media attention. But lately they've gotten picked up again. The mayor's office, the human rights office of the mayor's office of Bogota has taken this struggle up as an example of the precarious that's facing them within. And so they're pushing that forward. It just came out in El Espectador, which is a big national newspaper within Colombia, and it's been being covered by the mayor's office on their media resources, so like their television stations and stuff.
People in the United States have a very large role to play. Could you talk about what it means to have international support, and maybe, you know, has that? Do you think that the small support they've received has helped to keep up that confidence, and where are we going?
Basically, the way that they explain it to us is that the international solidarity that they've received in terms of the visibility that they've received has kept them alive. So they really consider that they would have been assassinated before this point if we hadn't been with them all this time. In terms of the material support that we're offering, the fundraising we're doing, that's what's keeping them in the tents, able to continue to struggle. You know, the idea, I think, that General Motors has had this whole time is just to let them, you know, they're just waiting them out. They've got, certainly General Motors has more resources than the group of injured and fired workers who don't have employment. And so they've just been waiting them out. Luckily, we've been able to scrape together every single week enough to keep them going. And we're showing General Motors that this problem isn't going away. In fact, it's getting bigger. And with the opportunity that the GM recall survivors have afforded us, which is really a quite noble level of solidarity, where they're saying, wow, the situation of the injured workers is pretty similar to what we're facing. Let's join forces. It's really a moment for us to act, because at this point we can really offer them some visibility in the mainstream news, and we can really increase GM's interest in solving this labor situation. So you can find more information about this struggle on www.asocol.org. That's ASOTRECOL.org. And you can watch a one-hour documentary about the struggle there, and there's all sorts of background information and also ways that you can get involved and support the workers. ASOCOL is the Association of Injured Workers and Ex-Workers from General Motors in Bogota, Colombia. So it's a group of injured auto workers that joined together after they realized that GM was illegally firing them for their on-the-job injuries. The injuries are things like herniated discs, rotator cuff syndrome, injuries that are caused by repetitive movements and heavy lifting. And they're permanent disabling injuries that are leaving guys that are in their 20s and 30s walking with canes for the rest of their lives, in need of back surgeries. And what GM has done is they've simply created a disposable workforce. They bring in new workers, they use up their bodies, and they actually were accessing the guys' medical records and figuring out when they were too injured and firing them before they really fully understood the depths of their injuries. And kind of throwing them into this rigged system that made it so that they couldn't get workers' comp. So that's the situation. We believe that there have been thousands of workers that have gone through this fate. There's 200 of them that kind of flipped through the cracks and were able to prove their injuries and get them registered with the local government. I should point out that the regulatory agency, the Labor Ministry, has been involved in allowing this to happen, because the labor inspectors have created falsified papers in order to allow GM to illegally dismiss these workers. So basically, the workers were up against their own government, General Motors, and didn't have much option except to stand up for their rights. So that's what they did. They've been working together for over 3 years. In a tent encampment in front of the U.S. Embassy for almost 3 years at this point, over 1,000 days. And they've gone through 4 hunger strikes with their lips stitched closed with a needle and thread as part of an escalating series of actions to get General Motors to come to the table. General Motors, in fact, has come to the table, and they offered the guys a pittance of a settlement. It wasn't even enough to cover the injuries and the surgeries that they need as a result of having gone to work. But in sitting down, we consider that an acknowledgement of the legitimacy of the workers' grievances.
Your dedication to this is why so many people in Portland don't really know and are still talking about the struggle and are looking for more ways to get involved. So I really have to thank you for that, and for bringing people here, and for educating myself and Labor Radio listeners about the struggle, and for hanging in there against all odds, really.
Great.
Excellent.
Thank you
so much.
Paige.
This is great.
Now, time for the bullet. Let's the bullet. Let's the bullet. Let's the bullet. Let's the bullet. Radio. Time. booze full of the working the clashes educate organize activate yeah the time is now look up to the past to the 30s yeah the sit down to the strike it's time to make things right we've been taking it for far too long I'm the labor movement getting real strong we the we got labor radio with your host the Megan and Mayor.
To find out more information about what you've heard on tonight's Labor Radio program, you can go to kboo.fm and check out the Labor Radio page.
General Motors is, in every sense of the word, an institution typical of America. An organization, we like to call it a family, that has its being in thousands of communities all over the country. In almost every one, we are represented to a greater or less degree.
First, we will do the right thing for those who were harmed. And second, we'll accept responsibility for our mistakes and commit to doing everything within our power to make sure this never happens again.
It's a fight we knew all too well in Flint, Michigan. For it was here that my uncle and his fellow workers first brought down the mighty corporate interests that dominated their lives. It was the day before New Year's Eve in 1936, and hundreds of men and women took over the GM factories in Flint and occupied them for 44 days.
For U.S. auto workers, what's at stake here? Why stick your neck out to stand up for workers in other countries? I mean, what's the main reason that auto workers here, I mean, all workers, obviously, but especially other workers for GM should take interest in this?
Well, I think there's I can think of a couple of reasons right off the bat. I don't think there's any question that with all these multinationals having a global reach, I think GM may be in 100 countries or have 100 factories outside the U.S., but some gargantuan number of facilities all over the world. And I think it's futile to think that we in one country can, come to terms with a corporation that can freely range around the world and produce vehicles in lots of countries. I think that reaching out to workers who work at GM in other countries is long overdue and is very necessary. And in this instance, we're actually at the rank and file level doing that. And then the other reason is that we have to understand that General Motors and other companies use the circumstances of third world countries where trade union rights are not respected, in a country like Colombia, for example, to experiment with what kind of new structural arrangements they can have in the factory that works for them. The Colombian plant is virtually non-union. It used to be the site, a location of a strong union. And we can see that, for example, in that particular plant, that the breaking up of the workforce into tiers, two and three tiers wage structures, began in Colombia prior to it being widely used now in the auto plants here in the U.S. So if we're looking at what's going on in Colombia and other places like that, we can see what the companies have in store for us and here in the more developed country like the U.S., and we can already anticipate and respond rather than, sitting back and letting it happen here before we get organized and react.
It's very telling that it happened elsewhere before it happened here. And just on that note, what is the fight back here against two-tier? I mean, you say rank-and-file workers on UAW are supporting the GM workers and supporting this. What's going on in terms of the union strategy itself? I know it's something that's happening in a lot of other industries and even in the public sector. Is there a sense among the union leadership in UAW that you know of for expanding these sorts of struggles, or is there another strategy, if you want to comment on that?
Well, I think that I have to say that in our work, especially here in Detroit, but in different UAW locations around the country, in our work here, we've been able to educate and inform workers who otherwise would never have known about Columbia. And in fact, I'm assuming most auto workers here don't even know that GM has a plant in Columbia. That workers have a gut sense understood that this is critical and have responded. We've raised well over $10,000 in the last year from just gate collections or membership collections, or even from union locals that have passed motions to donate money. So that's been really very rewarding and very gratifying to see that when workers have the information that they respond in a union solidarity kind of way. And I think that's great. I think on the other hand that the UAW, especially in recent years and certainly since the bankruptcy restructuring of GM and Chrysler, that they've engaged more deeply into these joint partnerships with management. And I was thinking about that this week while the UAW was having its convention, and thinking that what it is, it's a limited partnership. That is, the UAW may be limited by what GM allows the UAW to do. And so far, the UAW has not, stepped up to the plate and taken this issue on of solidarity with GM workers in Columbia. But we're hoping to turn that around, and we're hoping that the UAW leadership will see that it's in the interest of all members, regardless of whatever partnership we may have with the companies.
Wow, and we're talking about an action going on right now while we're listening in Detroit. One of the hardest hit cities. Is there something about GM being in Detroit that's particularly symbolic or meaningful? I mean, are other Detroit workers getting involved at pointing the finger? Do you have anything to say about the particular history of Detroit and GM's history?
I think people would be interested to know that at the time of the bankruptcy restructuring in 2009. The GM was definitely wanting to get out of Detroit. And they were looking to go into a facility where they have what's called the tech center in Warren. And to Obama's credit, he put the nix on that and said, no, GM is going to have to stay in Detroit. So there's no question that probably the GM executives would rather not be right in Detroit where we so readily can organize a demonstration. On the other hand, you know, and I think this is important, GM plays both sides. I mean, what they do is they appear as a very charitable, you know, they donated $135 million to the development of the riverfront here at the city. Dan Akerson, out of his personal assets, contributed money to Habitat for Humanity. So it has this sort of public relations thing going on. And, of course, when we point out that this is at the expense of drivers who've lost their lives, that this is at the expense of workers who are permanently disabled, you know, it tells a bit of a different story. And that's the story that GM and the media here in Detroit have definitely not disclosed to the public.
Wow, I'm just imagining that Habitats for Humanity contribution and paired up next to a picture of the GM workers in their tents outside the U.S. Embassy in Columbia.
And especially, you know, because, I mean, we've been able to send money from the U.S. To the workers and to the families, but we certainly haven't been able to send the kind of money that would keep them in their homes. And one, Carlos, a wonderful brother that I got to meet when I was down there last summer, he's got a young family of three children and a young wife. And right now, his house is up for auction on July 4th. So their picture is really stark. They're parading, donating money to Habitat for Humanity. And the reason they're doing that here is because, of course, they've also plundered Detroit. And this is a way of, appearing generous and, kind to the people of Detroit, never mind that GM has plundered them.
Well, Frank Hammer, thank you so much for spending time with us and telling us what's going on in Detroit now, leading the charge against GM for the workers and victims of their products and the way they make their products.
You got it.
All right. Thank you so much. Is there anything you wanted to add or what resources that you wanted listeners to know about?
You can. There's more information available at the website www.asotrecol.org, and that's asotrecol.org. And there's also a Facebook page, Solidarity with GM Hunger Strikers.
Great, and we'll link that to our KBOO Portland
Thank
Labor
so
Radio
much.
Page too. Thank you so much, Frank. I can't wait to hear how it goes.
Down and try to rest, but Lord knows I'm too tired to sleep. Trying to tell you people, you know I do my job.
This has been Labor Radio here on KBOO Portland. The time is 6:31, Monday, June 9th, 2014. Coming up next on Labor Radio, it's Prison Pipeline.
Tune in to KBOO for the 27th annual Water.